This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Back home again in Indiana. And it's
Johncock, Bears makes a try. Johncock wins it by less than 0.1 seconds. Gordon Johncock has won his second 500.
Now Bears goes to the outside and Rick may have him. They move into the chartreuse. Rick Mears takes the lead.
Rick Mears becomes the third four-time winner of the Indianapolis 500.
Al Unser Jr. has the lead. One more turn to go. Here they come. Coming to the finish line. Bob Jenkins, who's going to win it?
The checkered flag is out. Goodyear makes a move. Little Al wins by just a few tenths of a second. Perhaps the closest finish in the history of the Indianapolis 500.
How I long for my Indiana home.
And we are ready for the 100th Indianapolis 500 coming up the end of the month. May 29th, heard exclusively on the radio on MS radio stations, including this one, 93.5, 1070 The Fan, also 93 WIBC, televised locally on tape delay two times, 7 p.m. on RTV6, and I think 10 a.m. the next day on Memorial Day. Those around the country can watch it live on ABC. Hello, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Trackside is presented by Verizon from the drivehubler.com studios. I'm Kevin Lee along with Kurt Cavan from the Indianapolis Star. David Deering is our studio producer. We continue to work our way towards the 100-500. And don't forget, in a week and a half, the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Saturday afternoon, May 14th, one of those that will be competing in both of those, one of the championship contenders. He has been entertaining and impressive so far this season, especially at Barber Motorsports Park a few weeks ago. It's the driver of the number 15 Steak and Shake Honda for Rahal Letterman Lanning and Racing. Graham Rahal joins us right off the top. Graham, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Appreciate you guys having me.
We're giddy about it being the month of May and being in Indianapolis as someone who actually gets to participate in the 100th running of the world's greatest race. Do you ever stop and you know, I know you look forward to this race every year, but does it have a different feel this year?
Yeah, of course it does. You know, I mean, obviously it's a big year, you know, for obviously the 100th, as everybody knows, but 30 years on from my dad winning as well in 86. It's just all around special, you know, special year for us and for our family and our team and sponsors. So, you know, I'm excited to be a part of it. And, you know, hopefully we can go out there and have a good shot at it. That's what we all want is a fair shot coming into this deal, an opportunity to win, you know, to write our names in those history books. And you know, it'd be great for us to be, I believe, the second father and son duo to ever do it with the Unsers. It'd be pretty cool, pretty unique. And, you know, we're going to work hard to make it happen.
We'll talk about the manufacturer side in a second. We want to ask you about Texas testing yesterday. But it seems like, and it feels like to me, your race team is in a much stronger position than even it was this time last year. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously you guys know it because you get to be there and see it and kind of see the way we operate. But I definitely think, you know, as a team at Rahal Letterman Lanigan, you know, we're in a better spot. I mean, last year at this time, yeah, we were coming off a good result at Barber, but really our base was 2014, which was terrible, you know. And this year, you know, we know that we belong up front. We know we can run up front. We know we can contend and compete and win races. And so I think as a mentality as a whole, you know, our guys are much more confident. We all believe in our abilities, you know, a lot more. And I think we've got a good basic setup sheet and everything else to start off of. You know, and so I look forward to, like, the Grand Prix, for instance. I mean, I think we should be a lot more competitive than we were last year. I mean, yes, we finished second, but up until that point, you know, we were struggling. I think we qualified 17th or something, pretty poor. You know, and so hopefully we can come in, give ourselves a better option, a better opportunity, I should say, for success. And but, I mean, without a doubt, I think we're ticking a lot better, and everybody's working extremely well together, and it's been a lot of fun.
What did you learn at Texas yesterday?
I learned my car was loose. And
you knew that already.
Yeah, which I'm going to have to do a little work, and we're going to have to work hard to get that better. But after the Indy test, where we first tested the dome skids and stuff, I was already had that sensation, and so it appears that that's what it's going to do to our cars. That the cars are going to be very, very tricky to drive to try to get any sort of stability and raceability, let's call it, out of it, is going to be tough. But luckily we've got Indy, and we've got some time there to develop and work and improve, the race car, make it better. And then we'll get back to Texas. But yeah, I mean, a lot of guys, it's interesting kind of watching everybody and the way that everybody was running in packs, or trying to down a Texas test, which we never do. Normally in tests, everybody's kind of on their own, but everybody put a big emphasis on getting together, running together. Let's see how this really is and go from there. I mean, clearly, we're up against the rule book here, and it sure looks like the rule book isn't going to change. And so whether that's good or bad is yet to be determined, but we the rules are what the rules are, and we're going to have to make the absolute most of it.
When you ran in a group, was the condition of squirreliness better or worse?
Unreal bad. Yeah, I mean, it's bad. But again, and I think everybody said that, other than maybe the Penske drivers, which is really no surprise there. But I know hearing from TK, seen some of his quotes and stuff, it looks like he had some concerns and everything. I mean, for me, it was really, really pretty poor. But I don't set the rules. I don't make them. I certainly try to influence them, but I haven't been successful with that. So, for me, it's the same for everybody. We're going to have to go out there. We're going to have to work extremely hard to get these cars working right and to be able to get them to race well. But, I mean, as we all know, we're going to put on a great show. No matter what we have to do, everybody's going to work hard to make it happen. And also, let's remember, we tested at Texas. That's a very different animal, but it also was in the middle of the day. When we race there and the sun goes down, I mean, again, that changes the whole dynamic of the entire event. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Why do you think they don't test at night in similar conditions to when you race?
We do in some places. We do in some places, but this time of year.
Yeah, it'd be so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be
so much cooler.
Really, you're talking about like 50 some degrees at nighttime there.
Yeah.
Whereas
when
we go back and race, I know it's only a month away, but we all know, you guys know this as well as me, it'll be 1,000 degrees.
Yeah.
So, it wouldn't really be relative at this point. But it was good to go down there. It was good to test, to learn a little bit more. I took from it that my car, when I tested at the Speedway to my car in Texas, where the balance was extremely similar. So I think the things that we can work on at the Speedway will affect us there too. And then obviously we're going to go on to Pocono and everything else and have a similar sort of condition that we're going to have to work out.
Graham Rahal is joining us. Now, we've heard drivers say in the last few years, we should make the cars harder to drive, but they're talking about something different than this, right? They're talking about just, we need to be able to lift and use the throttle to make it harder and not be flat all around. This, I assume, even for those that say that, is an entirely different circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, it is different. In the race running, testing, I was probably doing 80%, 80% lifts. So you're lifting a lot for Texas. And I think that's going to be part of the game for sure. But obviously, the keys are to make sure that the tires can stay underneath us well enough to race. And number two, where I see the issue with the dome skid is it's inconsistent, even on your own. One lap the car handles one way. The next time you go through, you go over a tiny little bump, and the way that the air flows underneath the car, it completely changes the balance 100%. And it's just inconsistent in the feel. And so no driver is going to be able to be pushed that hard with an inconsistent race car. And that's going to be the key, is to try to improve that. Again, obviously, what I hate, and I said this earlier today, I said this last night, I was doing an interview as well, or maybe it was this morning, I can't remember. But I was talking about, I hate that what we're doing is sitting here talking about the rules.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think the series' job is to not do that. It is to, they shouldn't the rules should not be the topic of conversation. The topic of conversation today should be the Indianapolis 500 and the Angeles Grand Prix. I mean, it should not be the dome skids, because at the end of the day, I know what a dome skid is, but not a single fan, or very few, obviously, really gets what it's even about. You know, so, you know, I just hate that that kind of has been the conversation point as of late. But, you know, again, I don't make the rules. We live by them. We try to find a way to improve and to be the best that we can, and that's our job as a team.
Question on Twitter for Graham Rahal from Brandon Hagedorn. Can we get a clarification on this new, in quotation marks, Honda engine for Indy?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I'm the first guy to mileage out my engine, of which I did yesterday. In fact, I think I went about 200 miles over what my engine was meant to do. And I thought that engine was going to be done until I found out that it's got to do the pit stop competition at Indy. But it's the new engine has a lot of new hardware in it, which was the 2016 homologation. In essence, what we're running on a 2016, what they call, you know, a 16X1 or whatever, 6X1, is a 2016 engine base, but the internal parts are very similar to what we ran last year, a couple of reliability changes. When you go to the 6X3, which will be our next version that I will get at the Grand Prix, the hope is that it develops a lot more power. But it's very hard to say because I have not driven it on a track. It's been on a dyno. It's run on the dyno. You know, and I really don't know what to tell people about the performance or what they should expect just yet because I just don't know. You know, and I'm going to put the thing in and strap it to the back of us for the first practice at the Grand Prix, and let's hope it looks good. But, you know, that's going to be pretty much what we've got.
The other big topic of conversation among those of us diehards that listen to this show weekly, along with dome skids, would be aero kits. And there's a lot of debate about whether this has worked, whether they're going to continue through 2017. I keep hearing drivers tell me every time I get up behind someone, it takes so much air off the car, I can't even stay close, let alone try to make a pass. Does something need to be done before we even get to 17 to ensure that we continue to have the type of exciting racing? We had that at Barber, but that's really been the only one so far this season. Do we need to do it instead of waiting before 17?
Well, we've waited for a year and a half, and for some reason the rules haven't changed. And, you know, everybody's been saying this since day one. The initial concern with sidewalls and strakes, which are the parts that we put on the underwing that create downforce utilizing the floor of the car, which, if you go back to my dad's years, the reason the wings were so small, the rear front and rear wing, was because those cars developed so much downforce from the underwing. And what we've done, which is what it should do, to be clear, but what we've done is remove the underwing and only rely on the top side downforce. When you rely on the top side downforce, the issue is, when you follow a car, then you have none, you know, because the air blocks the car, you know, blocks your wings and stuff, so there's no airflow over your car. Whereas the underwing, utilizing that, it still creates suction to the ground, you know, just because there's constant airflow. So why we haven't put those back on yet, I don't know. But I've been pushing for it, and a lot of guys have, because on the short ovals and on the road courses and street courses, it makes complete sense. And it makes no sense to not run it. However, once again, as I say, the rules are we're not allowed to use it. They initially took them off because with the aero kit, they were concerned about the amount of downforce and the loads through the suspension. Mm-hmm. But it's not really a relative, you know, topic to discuss because we won't, like at Long Beach, for instance, if you had put the under tray back on the car, I wouldn't run the wing angles I run because I would trim it out more because you can't be slow down the straight. So there would be a balance. It's not like I'm just going to put the underwing on and I'm going to be golden because I've got 300 pounds more downforce. No, it's still a balance of drag versus downforce and straight line speed versus corner speed. but it allows you to follow closer. And, you know, we all own those parts. Every team has those parts. So it's not a cost thing. It really just comes down to somebody just making the decision that it's going to be allowed. And I can guarantee you it will make the racing better.
Graham, I know you have other commitments tonight. Thank you for jumping on board. It was a great show at Barber. I know it didn't go the way you wanted, but it was highly entertaining. And congratulations to Courtney on getting a win recently.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
We'll talk to you soon. Graham Rahal, the driver of the number 15 Steak and Shake Honda. He will be front and center for the Carb Night Burger Bash. Are we saying presented by Steak and Shake?
No,
or the Steak and Shake Carb Night Burger Bash? They are a title sponsor, not a presenting sponsor, and there's a big difference there. Thanks to Graham for coming on the show. Tonight, go inside Indy with IndyCar Mobile. Listen to team radio feeds. Watch live, in-car cameras, and more only on your phone, only on Verizon. Data usage applies. Available on select devices. More of Trackside, presented by Verizon on 93.5 1070 The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Let's go to the Twitter inbox at KevinLee23. First, from Sam, how does one make a donation to the Burger Bash? If they wanted to donate to some of the causes, if they're out of town and cannot do it, is there a way?
That's interesting. I think if you will send me an email specifically, I haven't put it on the Facebook page, but if you want to send me an email directly, I will get that information. Now that I say that... just send me an email, kurt.cavan@indystar.com, and I'll direct you to that, and I will rectify that situation online rather than going through the details of it.
Sean Hall at Goose Hall. Yes, thank you, Sam. Goose Hall 63, he sent this before we talked with Graham. He sent this late afternoon. See if you can get a straight answer out of him on if Honda got it together this year for the Indy 500. Well, if you've ever listened to Graham, you get nothing but straight answers. He's going to tell it like he sees it, and that's one of the reasons we like talking to him. He is going to be as honest as he can be, sometimes more honest than he should be, and he takes some heat for that at times. We happen to like that, and I've said many times, you know, I try to avoid really coming down on someone for just being honest and not giving the bland answer, but I think he's telling you what he thinks he knows.
Well, and I was listening particularly closely to when he was talking about the decision makers relative to the rules. And he wasn't saying they're ridiculous, these guys are silly, they don't know what they're doing. He didn't say derogatory things like that. He was just saying our opinion is that we need the downforce in the under tray as opposed to an up top, because when there's a lack of airflow from being in traffic, we can't generate the downforce. That is stating an opinion, backing it up with his perspective, and not making it personal. So I thought that he was well within his right to say that.
And the reason they are not making the change is because the other half of the field, certainly the leading group, I mean, it's fair to say that Team Penske, with a partnership with Ilmor, the engine builder, has more influence than some other Chevy teams, right or wrong, they're happy with the way things are. So when the two sides can't agree and the rule book is written a certain way, it's a little more challenging just to change it on the fly.
Well, IndyCar's contention is that all the manufacturers in the series got together a year ago and made a decision about how this package would look, and they all agreed, and things haven't materialized on the racetrack. And
I think Art St. Cyr at Honda has said, yeah, I did agree to this, but it didn't work out the way we thought it would once we did a test last fall.
So, you know, that's why they haven't backed off, is that they all agreed at one point, and one appears to have compensated better than the other one. Because there's no really discussion point here that Chevrolet is making more downforce with the bottom of its car, and the Hondas are making more downforce with the wings, the things above the car. So when you have a situation of traffic in play, the ones who are making the downforce upside are at a disadvantage to the ones who are making downforce downside, if that makes sense.
Shane in Australia, up early on Thursday morning at Upshifted, says, after listening to Graham explain engines and aero kits, I feel like I've gained five IQ points. Well explained.
I was thinking about, you know, we've talked about James Hinchcliffe being a good broadcaster moving forward. Graham is really succinct. He has a good voice. And I think he has not only good personal experience, he has historical perspective.
Think about this. In, hopefully for their sake, 20 years, Hinchcliffe, Graham, Joseph Newgarden, all three will be great in the booth when they want to do it.
Yeah, Graham is much underrated in terms of being able to explain something. Now, you can not like his perspective. You can say I'm for the other team, but he really he presents things pretty succinctly, and I generally agree with him when I've listened to him.
From Don at Caldwell Realty, not to be negative, but skids are sounding like a problem. The rulemakers missed the downforce package at Phoenix. Thoughts?
Well, as you pointed out, it's only really had one good race this season. I mean, now what have we had, four? But, you know, really the Barber race is the one that we've seen that went well.
Well, the skids are not an issue because those aren't on the cars. And they weren't on the car at Phoenix either. They're just for the Super Speedway.
Right, I forgot he said skids.
Yeah, two different things. They're two different issues. And that's really more what I was alluding to. We had already talked about the 500 and their concerns there. But I have a real concern if what the drivers are telling me is accurate, and we have watched the races, that this package just does not create good racing. And I do believe they're going to change for next year. But are we going to lose audience if we suffer through less than entertaining races? You know, we're a quarter of the way through the season this year. I don't think you can change it, but it's something to be explored. And the problem is, again, that you're not going to get a consensus with both manufacturers. Chevy is pretty happy with the way things are going right now.
Having said all this, and you pointed it out, I believe, on this show a week or two ago, good races can become great races with just a few cautions.
Yeah.
You know, you throw a couple cautions into these races that have gone flag to flag, and you've got 15 beasts all chasing each other. So that can create an entertaining race if we just had a caution.
You know, as I said, when this came out, from a purity standpoint and just on race ethics, I'm not for a competition clock. But from an entertainment standpoint, I am curious to see how this continues to play out for the NASCAR trucks. There's something to think about there in today's entertainment, that you need this.
Well,
you'd love to see it happen purely, but that's random and it doesn't always happen. And you can get snoozers. And 30 years ago, everyone accepted snoozers with two cars on the lead lap. They tune out now. So I don't know if I'm willing to go there, but I'm willing to think about it.
Interesting. I don't know. I think, you know, if this, you know, I listen to him talk about having a loose race car at Indy, and I don't like the idea of somebody hitting the wall. But a few of those at the right time changes the complexion of the race, and it will bring more people bunched together. I mean, your perception of a good race, right or wrong, isn't based on how many passes for the lead. It's how close cars are running. Can you pass somebody? And truthfully, you know, how many challenges do you have for the lead? Not necessarily passes. The point is, there's all different ways to judge a good race, and it's not all from not everyone judges it from the same perspective we do.
And to Don's question about the skids and the concerns for Indianapolis, the problem is we're just not sure, is it as extreme as what Honda says, or is everything fine, like some of the Chevy people have said?
I talked to somebody yesterday, and we were going to get into this more with our show last night, but about an hour left in the test yesterday, I talked to somebody who was there, who was watching it, and has a pretty good eye for these kind of things, and was talking about how 10 to 12 to 13 of these cars were all mixing it up in the pack, and it looked to the eye like there wasn't any issue. That the issue wasn't as pronounced as maybe we had feared. Now, what do we take from that? Maybe nothing. But you know, the Hondas and the Chevys mixed it up pretty good in this test yesterday for at least some extended period. And by the way, one of the things that has happened in these tests is the nobody wants to lead. You know, whether it's, you know, they just don't want to lead. So the drivers were told, I got this from a driver, they were told, if you got out in front, stay there for three laps. Don't just automatically shuffle back, and let's see how this impacts those trailing you before you just give up the lead.
Sure, and you want to know how the car handles in front? Usually it handles a lot better. Should.
Yeah. So anyway,
Indy, they don't want to lead because they burn more fuel.
Well, I liked what Graham said, is that we tried as a series, we tried several different ways, and we ran as a pack, which he said you never do in a test.
Yeah.
So everybody seemed to be playing along at Texas.
Yeah, I did. I took note of that as well, because that's something I've said. I just don't know if you learn as much as you should or can at test, because everybody gets spread out.
And does their own thing.
And they're also not running as hard as they can. They're not racing yet. It's practice, like Allen Iverson says. And when it comes time to race, then they turn it up, and that brings sometimes a new slew of issues, concerns, or problems. We'll get into one of the other hot topics. A lot of tweets about Boston, potential replacements. There are new media reports and conversations about that. We'll hit on next. Trackside, 93.5, 1070, The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
Fast Times Indoor Karting is where you find, often, professional drivers, IndyCar drivers, short track drivers, and people like me and David. Come out and join us. Fast Times, now a proud sponsor of Trackside, celebrating 15 years, locally owned, operated, newly renovated, and brand new karts that we tried out just about 6 weeks or so ago. Junior karts, too. Two-seaters, perfect for date night. Book your 2016 private event before the end of the month. You'll save 15%. If you haven't experienced the bi-level track at Fast Times, no better time than right now. 96th and Keystone, next to Woodland Bowl, online at FTIK.com. Fast Times Indoor Karting. Trackside on 93.5, 1070 The Fan is presented by Verizon. At Kevin Lee 23 is the Twitter handle. And to our next topic, many tweets on this. Davis Racing 322. Should IMS host a one-day event road course race to replace Boston? Great location to keep costs down for teams. We discussed that a little bit last night.
I guess I would be surprised. You know, that would put three of your 16 races in this city. Seems like a lot. It would seem to me that the series would be better served just to, you know, save their money, save the team's money. I don't know how well they would draw, truthfully. I mean, would you draw enough to kind of cover your expenses?
No.
No.
Now, you're going to lose less money here than renting out Gateway or Watkins Glen or Milwaukee or cutting a deal with an ISC track or whatever. You'd lose less money because, as you said, the teams have fewer expenses, and it's your track, so you can maybe help the books there. But, you know, it's not going to be a real good visual. Now, there's some thought that maybe away from the Indianapolis 500, that's the better location. Keep in mind, too, though, in Indianapolis, that's U.S. Nationals weekend.
That's true.
Which, you know, maybe can help you if you time it out correctly. Maybe you run it on Saturday afternoon and you work with Lucas Oil Raceway to time some things out, to have some downtime, and you have some shuttles going back and forth. So maybe you could work that in your favor and market it as a super weekend. So that isn't necessarily the negative, and this will answer then Andrew Ringham's question, A. Ringham, about IRP.
You're not racing an IRP.
No, it's well, one, because there's already an event there that weekend. Two, that track is not feasible for Indy cars.
Hasn't been safe.
It's not feasible for Indy Lights cars, Pro Mazda cars. That's the biggest, fastest open-wheel car that you can run there.
Well, I think when they ask that question, I think about the road course, and that is absolutely not feasible. And the oval isn't big enough, really.
And then he also says, the Indiana State Fairgrounds, get them back on dirt. And, you know, I know a lot of people would love to see them on dirt, but you have to you got to get new cars. You have to get different cars, and then you're doing an entirely different type of racing. And, well, we already have that kind of racing. to have that kind of racing. So if you want to see dirt racing, you can see that. And yes, it's different drivers, so there is something to be said for exposing these drivers to a different market, but that's not going to be an IndyCar race.
We've spent already too much time on this topic because it's not happening.
But we don't explain why it's not
happening. Yeah, that's true.
Because we get that question all the time.
These cars are not running on dirt.
No, I know these cars are not running on dirt, but it's not feasible really to buy new cars and do that on dirt either.
That's right.
And you can go back and say in the early 70s they made a mistake by stopping dirt races being a part of the national championship, but that's an entirely different conversation. That's a long, long time ago. More on Boston, though. I mentioned this. There was a report today in the Boston Herald quoting Michael Printup, who you talked to recently, the track president at Watkins Glen, basically saying, make me an offer. Now, first, remind us what he told you.
Well, I spoke to Michael about a half an hour yesterday, and his first contention is they don't have room in the schedule. They've done three-year contracts with everybody that they do business with, and I suppose what he's saying is we could be the group that has the facility during those particular days could be bought out, you know, such and such, blah, 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 and make us an offer. But there's a whole litany of reasons why that track doesn't work for IndyCar or IndyCar doesn't work for that track at this time. And I'm not going to go into the half-hour discussion, but I've known Michael a long time. He didn't hold anything back, and I didn't hold anything back. And it's my contention, and unless IndyCar throws a ridiculous amount of money that he can't say no to, there will not be a race at Watkins Glen on Labor Day weekend.
There's a Ferrari event there that weekend, and I'm sure you're right that there is a dollar figure where you could satisfy that group and you can make it happen. Here's my interpretation of his quotes to the Boston Herald saying, Jay Fry called me, you know, and I first told him, no, we can't do it. And he said, well, just take a week and think about it. And Michael Printup said, you know, I suppose if you want to make me an offer and you want to overwhelm me with an offer, we can do this. What he might be doing here is he doesn't want to be the bad guy to IndyCar fans that would love to see another race, would love to see a race at Watkins Glen by simply saying, no, there is no way. So he shifts the pressure back on IndyCar and says, if you want it bad enough, we can make it happen. And in reality, he likely knows there's no way they're in the financial situation to overpay for this event when you're only doing it just to make sure you have an event on TV and to continue some momentum. There's reasons to do it, but are they in the financial position where they can do it for that?
Remember, too, that and I would say any track, and this is why I think it's more likely to be a place like Gateway, any place where IndyCar goes and hosts a race, let's say they have a race, and by the way, I still am kind of the belief they will not have a race. I think throwing together a race in 4 months is almost an impossible situation unless you're this track, even this track, I mean, at Indy, you know, the road course. I think that any track that hosts this IndyCar race we're talking about, the fan base is then going to expect it's back next year. And if you're Watkins Glen and you're not willing to have, you're not interested or you're not going to have IndyCar back next year, you run the risk of ticking off more people than you satisfied the first time. It's certainly within the realm of reasonability. I think if you have a race someplace, the expectation is they'll be back next year. I think we always feel that way. I think we left New Hampshire thinking they'll be back next year. Now, you want to go run New Hampshire? That's the one I haven't really factored in too much. New Hampshire may be saying, yeah, we'll do it for this price, and that may seem fairly reasonable to IndyCar. I think Watkins Glen's price would be higher.
Because they have to bump somebody out. So you do have to find someone that at least has an open weekend on their schedule, and then it's just a matter of making sure that they don't incur any losses out of this. You're going to have to cover their costs and guarantee that they are not losing money in this deal.
And pay whatever has to happen. Remember, IndyCar still would have to pay you know, if they cut their losses now, that, you know, their people aren't on the road that weekend. You know, there's some expenses, paying the purse, paying whatever it is they pay. So there might be something to that, although I don't think that's a big deal. Obviously, they need to have a race if possible.
This Boston Herald story also said the mayor of Providence did say that he's not talked to anybody yet, but he's open to a conversation. We think that's where the promoter is still trying to go, because that's the similar format. He can certainly move his sponsors over because it's the New England area. But as we've said before, doing a street race is much more difficult to get done. And if they were going to have a race in Providence, if it was ripe for running, they would have already done that, because they had explored that a few years ago to the point where I was told privately, yep, we're going to Providence. I have been to Providence, and I have walked the area where that track was supposed to be, but I've not seen any race cars there.
That's right.
And Louis Brewster, Inland Daily Bulletin.
One of the LA market.
And we've had him on the show before. Yeah, He's a good guy, knows his stuff, and obviously it's his market, so he would like to see a race in his market again. He's a supporter of IndyCar, but unfortunately he didn't have the entire story there. His suggestion, again, was that you come back to Fontana and run that as the season finale. That's not realistic. Sonoma has already, I'm sure, got that in their contract.
It does.
And possibly even paid to be the season finale. So, again, the reasons why they're not running at Fontana right now are the reasons why you certainly can't do it after Sonoma. Could you do it Labor Day weekend?
You could.
You could. You could.
Sure, you could. But, you know, that brings a whole other can of worms and expenses. And, yeah, you know, they're...
And the track president there said it costs too much money to turn the lights on. Because that's what we're first thinking, is you run a night race there. Well, he said, we don't draw enough people or make enough money to turn the lights on and pay the bill. But that's the best way to do it, is if you could run a night race there, either on Saturday or Sunday night. Just make sure you're not head-to-head with whatever the NASCAR event is. So maybe, you know, I wouldn't totally rule that one out, but it's not going to be the season finale.
No, it's not. They're going to run in at Sonoma and do their championship banquet in San Francisco. Probably at the Hilton, since the Hilton is the new partner on Ray Hall's car. I bet if you want to stay at the Hilton in downtown San Francisco, you might see some Indy cars and drivers and so forth.
Snarky Moose, S2000 Moose, says the IndyCar series is the third or fourth priority for Miles. IndyCar needs someone who lives and breathes. It is in charge. The Boston Mess is the newest case study, proving IMS needs to divest control, if not ownership, of IndyCar.
I would think
this is a pretty high priority for Mark Miles.
Yeah, and remember, he has Jay Fry. Mark Miles, I've read some emails where people said, you know, Mark needs to make IndyCar his priority. Well, first of all, the 100th running is on tap. The 100th running of the Indy 500 is on tap. That helps everybody. And second of all,
is that an IndyCar race?
It is an IndyCar race. And okay. It certainly helps IndyCar. But the point is, Jay Fry, that's his job. His job is to worry about IndyCar and report, just like Clabber Girl reports ultimately to Mark Miles, just like Indianapolis Motor Speedway reports to Mark Miles. The IMS Productions, these are all divisions of Hallman & Company. And Mark Miles is... business card does not say president of IndyCar. He says, you know, he's in charge of multiple things within Hallman & Company.
But he is still conceivably the CEO of IndyCar. I don't know
sure.
if that says that on his title, but he essentially took on that title a couple of years ago when we were talking about that. And he decided, you know what, I'm going to just keep that. And, you know, I think Jay Fry probably covers some different areas to help Mark than Derek Walker did from Jay's background. Derek obviously had some background that Jay is not in the technical department, is not going to be as strong in, but he's obviously got enough working knowledge to find out what he needs to know and to ask who does know. I remember in his opening press conference basically saying, yes, this is a big company and there are a lot of things involved here, but IndyCar is the area of this company that has the biggest potential for growth. So this is where we can go from a certain level down here to up here.
So that kind of leads
me to believe that this is a pretty high priority on his list. I'm not trying to make apologies for him, but I think I think you can multitask a little bit. This obviously did not go well. This whole Boston thing,
yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Well,
and at some point, we'll see if we can get, because we don't know everything, and they may not be able to tell us everything, but we'll get Jay or Mark on and just, what happened? How did this happen?
Yep.
And there may be a good explanation of all that. I've not really asked people internally for what happened, all of this. You know, in the race weekends, I've got a different job than you do. You know, I'm not doing a pit report about what's happening in Boston. That would be more Robin's area and then other newspaper writers. So I haven't really spent a lot of time. And now I'm a chucklehead on the radio, and we just throw things out and talk about things.
Well, it's also a very complicated web when you have the multiple agencies involved.
Yeah.
So it's not a simple answer.
And clearly the mayor of Boston thought that everything was fine, too.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to different things. Stay with us. Trackside 93.5, 1070 The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Cabot and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Experience every pass, pit, blip, and checkered flag on your phone. Download IndyCar Mobile from Verizon to go inside IndyCar all season. Data usage applies, available on select devices. Trackside is presented by Verizon. It's available on the IndyCar Mobile app from Verizon and on the Indy 500 page at 1070thefan.com. More from Twitter at KevinLee23. From Stephen V. King, would the easiest solution to be to make the Sonoma event a doubleheader? I'm not for that at all. Especially, I would be very opposed to making the season finale a doubleheader. You need to go into that race weekend understanding the scenarios, promoting your championship contenders, and then you have a race, and then you have 18 hours to get set for the championship race.
Oh, I would totally agree. And besides that, the contract, they have other things on the racetrack, too. They don't just go and throw another race on the back end.
You know, the only reason you do that is if Verizon says, no, you said 16 races. We are pulling out and not paying you our money if you don't have 16. Then you do that for a technicality. But you don't do it there.
No, you don't do it
there.
You
do it somewhere else earlier in the season.
You would do it at Mid-Ohio, maybe. Although Mid-Ohio's schedule is just as busy. You could do it at Toronto. Toronto actually has done doubleheaders.
But I assume their schedule, every road course event is full.
I'm saying you would do it someplace like that.
Yep. Bryce Deiniger says, continue to grow the crowds at current tracks on the schedule, and after it reaches appropriate level, then focus on new markets. Sure, that's a solid strategy to do that. But races do potentially create some revenue, so you're interested in it from that standpoint, too. Jeff F., Colt 66, more races, period. As an IndyCar fan, I get bored from the long stretches between races. That's the big fear of all of this, is if you go a month without a race and have one in the final 6 weeks or whatever.
You'd have two after July 31st. Two after July.
So that's two in the final 6 weeks.
Well, I'm just saying two in the final 5 months of the calendar year.
Yeah.
And you don't race again till March, you'd have two in 7 months.
Michael Hogg says, any chance they could go back to Charlotte, Nashville, or back to Michigan in the near future?
No.
Charlotte, definitely not. I don't hear anything from Michigan.
They're not going
to Michigan. Crowds were too sparse, and Nashville is closed.
So that would be no.
And he also says, I understand they can't run at Lucas Oil Raceway, but what about Indy Lights? That's the perfect size, I think. Nope, those are too big and too fast, too. Indy Lights does not work there.
We're just full of optimism and cheer and goodwill tonight, aren't
but
we?
But we're honest, and at least we have answers. I can't tell you about bronze badges on Tuesdays, but we can give you definitive answers on some things like this. J-Hall 1455, Joseph, cautions create better racing. If you listen to Graham, cars can't get close enough to pass, thus no cautions. Equals bad racing, mark?
There's a lot to that. You can connect those dots. There are some dots you can't connect. Those two you can.
Stephen V. King, the best thing for road and street course racing is a drying track. Wet the track pre-race. Bernie's water cannons. I'm telling you, that's what we need.
That's right.
He's right. And we laughed at Bernie when he said that. I'm not for that either. You can't do that.
The strange thing about what Bernie said with water cannons is I'm surprised he didn't have the tracks installed drainage, you know, the other direction where it fed water from inside the track. Not exactly cannons, but these are like mist with, buried within the surface. That would have been the Formula One way to do it.
M&W Transportation, Drive MW, says, following up on my question last night, my fear is the lack of car owners. What if something happened to Penske, Ganassi, or Andretti? To be honest, I don't remember what the question was, but we all have that fear. That's why we talk about if they can come up with anything to get Michael Schenck in the Indy 500, you need to do it. They do need more car owners.
I think they have 9 for the series. Can you believe that? And if you were needing to have a meeting with car owners in the field, you could meet with 3 car owners and come up with more than half the field.
8, 11. Is that
12.
Right? 12. 12.
Ganassi has 12, yep. Or 4. Penske has 4, and Andretti has 4. That's 12 of your 21 or 22 starters.
Yep. Matthew Croft at Croft IndyCar. Is Donald Trump going to drop the green flag this year?
No, Donald Davidson is.
I like that idea.
I like it a lot.
I do like that idea.
Can you
Donald,
wave the flag,
Donald is going to say no, but we're not going to give him an opportunity if he's drafted. He's not going to be involved in this conversation if we can convince someone to make that happen.
You know, he's really, I think he's a little bit hurt that he was 89th in the most influential poll of the Indy Star. I said yesterday, Donald, I'm sorry you were 81st, and he said, I'm 89th. So I think it. He's flattered, he
said. We'll get into that list a little later on. That's an interesting conversation we'll do on that. You know, I saw someone said that IMS is going to regret the decision to boot him out of the pace car a few
years
ago. You
mean Donald Trump?
Donald Trump. No, they're not. No, you. Whether he's the president or not, he's... Next. Too much of a polarizing figure. He obviously has his supporters, but he's got more detractors than many politicians. There have been some that have been thought of in similar ways.
And the way I see this election, they all have detractors, a lot of detractors. That's another show.
Yeah, I'm struggling. I struggled yesterday.
Me too.
I made a choice, and it was to block, and it didn't work.
Now we've gotten to the meat of the show.
Everyone withdrew today. Yeah. Let's see. Next question is from Richard. We don't have real bumping, but with lots of possible drivers for very few seats, it's like a month of phantom bumping. He's right. That's about all we have. We have reports
we have
and rumors of
bumping.
Different deals. Marshall Pruitt wrote some things yesterday that we didn't have a chance to get to, so here's the latest rumor out there. Mario Dominguez is talking with Michael Schenck to try to put something together.
Oh, boy.
It's possible Gary Peterson is trying to resurrect his deal with another team that would help crew it. And if Luca Filippi isn't in the coin car, then maybe that's somewhere where Gabby Chavez could end up with the financing he has available, or James Davison, who is still trying to make something happen. And then you never, we always have the silly season with people walking around and, you know, Tony Stewart's talking to AJ Foyt, those kind of things. So you're still going to have those rumors. Whether or not there's anything to them, well, that takes all the fun away.
Well, this is as silly as I can remember for many, many reasons.
Why so?
Well, Mario Dominguez hasn't been in a race since 08.
I know it.
That's Michelle Georgiane.
But we had him. He came. If you come up with the check, you will get an opportunity. So we don't know what his financial situation is, so I can't rule that out.
I just mean it's silly, like humorous.
Well, yeah, it's not going to excite us. It's not, hey! And no offense to him, but
I like Mario,
yeah.
But hadn't been in a race since 08.
All right, didn't cover everything I want to cover.
We got tomorrow night.
We'll do it tomorrow night. You know what's tomorrow night?
Your birthday.
Sure. Sure, let's Max Chilton is going to be in studio. IndyCar rookie,
egg.
Formula One driver. I think he's going to be interesting to talk to. Extremely honest and candid. He's rubbed some people the wrong way. I think you might feel differently about him after you get a chance to hear him in longer than just a soundbite or a quote in the newspaper. So Max Chilton will be in tomorrow night right off the top at 7 o'clock. Now, your time to call in to talk about the history of the Indianapolis 500 with Donald Davidson. 317-239-1070 is our number. Thanks to Graham Rahal for joining us. Podcast up in a few minutes on IndyCar Mobile and 1070thefan.com. For Kirk Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Thanks for joining us, 93.5 1070 The Fan.